New York's effort to realize 70% renewable energy by 2030 was dealt a significant, potentially deciding setback in mid-April when the state's Energy Research and Development Authority announced that three offshore wind projects identified in October of 2023 and expected to generate about 4 gigawatts of power by 2030 would not be advancing. In the wake of this disappointing news for the state's green energy hopes, the Hochul administration announced it will be expediting a new solicitation for offshore wind energy. But Politico New York reports those projects won't be fully up and running by 2030. To unpack these developments, we're joined on the Capitol Press Room by Fred Zalkman, the former head of American Government Affairs for Ørsted, an offshore wind developer, and now the director of the New York Offshore Wind Alliance. Welcome to the show, Fred.
Good morning, David. Thank you.
So it has been reported that the three proposed wind farms that the state chose last fall to pursue relied on larger turbines from General Electric, which the company has subsequently scrapped plans to build. This means the offshore wind projects wouldn't have access to the technology of their initial proposals or at the same cost of their initial proposals. So the deal with the state was aborted. Was this avoidable, or do these kind of supply chain issues happen with projects of this scale and when utilizing this kind of evolving technology?
I would say it's not necessarily avoidable, but it is a function of the way New York has conducted the most recent solicitation. So, you know, what was unique about this solicitation is that the development of the offshore wind generation projects, the wind farms, so to speak, was inextricably linked with the development of major manufacturing. So when GE decided not to pursue the 18 megawatt line of turbines and the manufacturing facilities in upstate New York, that necessarily created some problems for the bid in totality. As you say, with GE backing out of its commitment to develop the 18 megawatt turbine and realizing the significant economies of scale associated with that, that had obviously some cost implications for the three bids, had permitting implications, because now the companies would need to locate more positions, and that would have to be approved by the Federal Bureau of Ocean Energy Management. And obviously, it also had implications for the developer's own commitment to the states for supply chain development and their support for localizing a supply chain here in New York.
Well, was there reason to believe that the future of the 18 megawatt turbine was as precarious as it ended up being? Was there something in, say, the proposal from the different bidders that noted this? Was GE upfront about this? Did the state turn a blind eye to potential ambiguity? I guess, was this something that should have been seen as a potential outcome and maybe ignored?
I'm not privy to what was included in the developer bids. As you can imagine, I'm sure that's highly commercially sensitive information. It's not entirely, as I say, unpredictable. The industry has, it's been a dynamic environment of late, given, you know, the headwinds that the industry is facing from inflation, high interest rates, and so forth. And I think the company decided that in this dynamic environment, not to pursue the 18 megawatt production line, and to sort of pause and allow the industry to build around sort of their latest offering, the 15 megawatt turbine. So, you know, it's a decision, a business decision that GE has made. Obviously, it's had some ripple effects across the New York industry, and indeed the industry throughout the United States.
General Electric at one point was planning to build two factories in the Capital Region where they would construct blades and certain turbine components, which I believe would be associated with the now three aborted projects. And I'm curious whether
these developments underscore larger problems with maintaining a New York-based supply chain, or whether the technological priorities in terms of moving away from the 18 megawatt turbine development is a one-off, and that there still can be a large role for New York manufacturers and construction to play in New York's offshore wind future.
This is perhaps an outlier and not necessarily indicative of the broader prospects for domestic supply chain in New York and indeed along the Eastern Seaboard. Given the federal government's ambitious targets, the state's ambitious targets, we will need a lot in the way of manufactured products, large components, ports and harbor revitalization, modernization, training a domestic workforce. So still a lot of needs that can't be met entirely by the global market. And indeed, I would say that manufacturing these products here in the U.S. actually may have some competitive advantages. For example, these are massive components, as you no doubt know, and transportation costs alone will be staggering. The logistics will be staggering. So there is some advantage to onshoring these components to serve not only the U.S. market, but the global market as a whole.
Well, before we move on, let me reintroduce you for listeners just joining us. This is the Capital Press Room, and we're speaking with Fred Zalkman, director of the New York Offshore Wind Alliance.
Do you think there's anything that state regulators should take away from this experience?
Well, the NYSERDA issued a request for information last week, and it is notable that one suggestion they're making, I think, is, and the industry is really clamoring for this, is to see greater flexibility and optionality in the use of local manufacturing. So, for example, in the future, if we have a developer who makes a major commitment to a certain turbine, if there are problems associated with that, delays or cost overruns or what have you, the developer of the offshore wind project can quickly pivot to another opportunity. So the problem, I think, in this case is that, once the GE situation materialized and there were significant changes to the value proposition to the state, that resulted in sort of the undoing of the entire bid. So I think we need a little bit more flexibility and optionality built into future procurements. And NYSERDA seems to be headed in that direction.
Well, sticking with the future of offshore wind procurement, the Hochul administration, as you mentioned, in the wake of revealing the three key offshore wind projects weren't advancing, announced plans to request proposals this summer for new offshore wind projects. What is the expectation for those in terms of the speed at which we might have power from these projects and the scope of these projects, considering that we're only 9 months potentially behind where we were with the projects that got canceled? Is it possible that those could be up and running in the same timeline?
The three projects were projecting commercial operation by 2030.
Right.
That was a very aggressive timeline. I'm not expecting a major, major delay from that should those projects ultimately be selected by NYSERDA and awarded under a different contractual framework. So it may not be 2030, but I would not expect a material delay beyond that should those projects be selected.
So you think there could be second life for those three aborted projects the way some other clean energy projects that got scrapped specifically because of costs found new life in subsequent solicitations?
Oh, without a doubt. I mean, all three projects continue with their pre-development efforts, so they are continuing with procurement. with trying to characterize their lease areas, understanding the wind resource available. So I fully expect these three projects to be back on the table.
Is that kind of a underreported aspect of the development of these projects, all the work that goes into them long before any physical construction might start?
Well, absolutely. There's a lot of legwork and cost and, you know, that goes into what by all accounts is, you know, a major infrastructure project. So not only, you know, understanding the conditions of the seabed, wildlife that may traverse the area, understanding and minimizing any adverse consequences to wildlife, all the procurement activity. Then there's, you know, the whole transmission component, how the cables will be sited to bring this massive amounts of power to the greater New York metropolitan area. So understanding both the transmission headroom onshore, but also how this massive power gets exported from the wind farm to shore. And there are many, many other elements. It's, you know, it's a multi-year effort. It really, from conception to first power, it could be anywhere from 8 to 10 years. So it is a very long timeline.
Well, finally, you mentioned transmission, and there's language in the final budget that will overhaul the transmission siting process in New York to some degree. And I'm curious whether you have any reaction to that language or anything else in the state budget as it pertains to the development of offshore wind or actually getting that offshore wind power to the people who need it.
Yeah, so you're referring to the RAPID Act, which was proposed by Governor Hochul to streamline the permitting process for the siting of transmission in New York State. And I will say we are very hopeful. You know, the transmission is one of the big gating items to offshore wind. The industry does want to be respectful that, you know, the environmental consequences and impacts to the community are fully vetted. But certainly we need, you know, more predictability and certainty around the timeline. So this is welcome. We'll see how the Department of Public Service rolls out this program.
Well, we've been speaking with Fred Zaltman. He is the director of the New York Offshore Wind Alliance. Fred, thank you so much for making the time. I really appreciate it.
I appreciate it as well. Thank you, David.
And for more Capital Press Room content, visit capitalpressroom.org or wherever you download your favorite podcasts. And if you listen to us from an Apple device, make sure to leave us a rating and a review so it helps other people find the show.
Support for the Capital Press Room provided by the New York State AFL-CIO, a federation of 3,000 unions fighting for working people by keeping New York State union strong. Visit unionstrongny.org for more information. Join us again for Capital Press Room, a production of WCNY Connected, Syracuse.